Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion.
Savage Nation Friday.
I can't get no
rock and roll Friday.
Businessman there, drink my wine. Plowman, dig
me louder, will you? Give him something to live for.
None will
blast out of that car is in his.
Nobody of it is worth.
I don't know, I'm back from vacation one day. I need a vacation already. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Where have all the evangelicals gone? Where have all the evangelicals gone? Now, in the last two elections, the evangelical people and movement was center stage to the re-election of George Bush. We know that John McCain appeals only to the left and to people he think will vote for him who never will. We know he's given the middle finger to the conservatives. And John McCain has made believe the evangelicals don't exist. That's why you don't hear about him. Are you an evangelical Christian? Who do you plan to vote for the presidency? Have you become more or less active in politics in the last 4 years? Do you feel evangelicals are ignored by the media? As an evangelical Christian, what do you hate most about U.S. politics? I know hate isn't part of the constellation of your vocabulary, but it exists. And do you think Bush has been good or bad for the evangelical folks in this country? Those are some of the questions that I'm thinking about. Now, the reason I'm doing this is because I tried the high road. We'll go to the middle road today. If this doesn't work, I'll go to the low road. Yesterday, I write one of the most brilliant radio editorials in history called Making the World Safe for Theocracy. And because theocracy is a four-syllable word, and because we've had a president who never says anything more than in two syllables, and because we have a one-syllable media, the four-syllable word theocracy blew off half the audience. I warned you yesterday what's coming, and so therefore you're not interested in it. I'll go on to this. I mean, now we're in the middle road. We took the third road. Now we're on the second road. Next, it'll be the first road. Eventually, I'll get down to the level of the balloon man and talk about lesbians and underwear. And then, of course, the folks will flock to the show if I talk about lesbians, underwear, brassieres. Then, of course, the TV offers will start flowing in because the vermin who run the media, of course, as you well know, have their minds not only in the gutter, they are the gutter. They're the ones who have created the pipelines of filth that run into your house, not me. Don't blame me for what's in your living room. Don't blame me for what's in your hotel room. It's the media madmen who have created the pipelines of filth running into your hotel rooms and your bedrooms and your schoolrooms, not me. I didn't do it. Yet they vilify me more than they vilify the pornographer because they are the pornographer. They vilify the evangelical more than they vilify the Islamic fascist. That's the world you're living in. Play Jimi Hendrix for a minute here. I'm not angry about it. No, don't get me wrong. Don't confuse this with anger. You'll know when I'm angry. This is not anger.
Said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion.
Who does not love Jimi Hendrix?
Businessmen,
they drink my wine.
Dig my herb.
Dig my herb.
None will level on the mind. Nobody of it is.
I think Bob Dylan wrote this. Well, he was one of the great poets of our time. Look what happened to him. He looks like my grandmother Gertie. What happens with guys over 60? The guys are like posed like tough guys with motorcycles that were never really tough. The tough guys always look tough, even when they're old. But the fake tough guys start to look like their grandmother after 50. The estrogen's finally clicking. No matter how many poses they have in black leather jackets with the arm. Hey, turn that off already, will you? You ever notice this thing went on for the last 5 years? People in the media, particularly cable media, they all pose with their arms in front of them like looking tough. What was that all about? Would you expect Greta Van Susteren to be tough, a woman who lives in a cistern? Would you expect that graceless woman, whatever her name is, who deals with the lowest smut on the planet, even she, they pose with the arms in front of her? What is that? Why do you have to look tough if you're not tough? As I said to you, tough guys look tough even when they're old. But it's not to put down Bob Dylan. Don't get me wrong. It just looks like my grandmother Gertie. Like something happened. Yeah, after 50, the estrogens kick. No matter how many leather jackets you wear. Millionaire missing on Hawaii's main island of Oahu. Here's an interesting story in a strange way. We're not taking pleasure in it, but we're going to draw a conclusion from it. Then I'll take your calls at 1-800-449-8255. You're listening to the one and only Savage Nation. Honoru, the millionaire founder of an internet software security company, remained missing on Hawaii's main island of Oahu this week, police said. Stephen Thomas, age 36, was last seen June 30th at the Princess Kailani Hotel in Waikiki, where his mother and a cousin were staying. His family said he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder in April, but has refused medication. Candace Thomas, the wife, said he thinks everyone on the island is out to get him. He thinks the military is involved. He thinks that aliens are involved. And he's just been in a real delusional state of being fearful. Okay. He was arrested April 27 and taken to Castle Medical Center after he ran naked into the middle of a race walk in front of his home in Lanakai. He is the founder of Boulder-based Webroot Software, Inc. The software company that created the spy sweeper and window washer programs was sold in 2004 to a group of investors for about $108 million. Thomas was concerned about the poor performance of an investment portfolio and discussions about moving back to Colorado full-time, his wife said. So the guy is worth $100 million, at least on paper, back in 04. Now he's arrested walking naked in the middle of a sidewalk, and he thinks aliens are out to get him. What can you conclude from this? What, that money can insulate you from madness or anxiety? Yes. Do you know a super wealthy person who is crazy, other than George Soros and the mayor of San Francisco? Can you name super wealthy people who are crazy, other than 80% of Congress and 93% of the Senate? Can you name a super wealthy person who is not crazy? Actually, that's a better question. Do you know a super wealthy person who is not totally crazy? Play another Jimmy, not the same Jimmy already. Don't sound monomaniacal. I'm warming up here on a Friday. What is that other one that Jimmy does? All Along the Watchtower, then there's the other one? That's it. Loud. As loud as you dare without breaking the speaker. Makes a sound. Can he sing already? He lived in Kula, Maui, Jimi Hendrix. Kula was great. They have great onions. Remember there was the Silver Sword Inn in Kula, Maui, 1,000 years ago. I used to love it up there. Those were the days. Well, at the time, I didn't like those days, but looking back, they looked like great days. They were horrible, just the same as today. They were never great days. All days are the same. You get up, and you go to sleep. You get up, whatever you do, no matter how you try, you're never going to beat your mortality. No matter what you do, take a look at the great artists, Michelangelo, Rodin, Seeking Immortality, Michael Savage, 28 books. You can say, okay, so it's on a minor scale, but nevertheless, I have a touch of the genius in me. Collecting plants. What do you think it all is? It's an attempt to beat mortality. You know you're going in the box or into the ash. And you want to leave like a record that you were here. For what? For what? What are you leaving it for? Who cares? The only thing you can do is try to tend your own garden, not commit homicide or suicide along the way, and try to be nice to your family. Beyond that, I can't promise you anything more. That's about it. The number one rule is don't commit homicide or suicide. That's number one. The number two rule is try. And it's not try to be nice to your family. And number three, the rest of the world, forget about it because it's going to give you nothing. That's it. That's the whole world. That's the world according to Michael Savage today. I'm not down. I'm not up. You look at this world today, what Bush and the Republicans and the Democrats have done to our country. Do you realize that if you made $50,000 last year, I'm giving you an example. Let's say you made $50,000 last year. I'm taking an average. Today, that $50,000 is worth $25,000. How can I prove that? Because of inflation, hidden inflation. How do you know that? Let me explain something. One of the best benchmarks of the actual level of inflation in our country is the price of a gallon of gasoline. You can say the Arabs are rolling us over a barrel, but in fact, what they're really doing is they're targeting the price of a barrel of oil to the actual worth of the dollar. You don't realize it, but the gangsters of Wall Street, the thieves in the Federal Reserve Bank who destroyed Bear Stearns and cashed in on their own, who did something that hasn't been done since the Rothschilds almost destroyed the Bank of England. And by the way, he was the predecessor of George Soros, and I'll tell you more about that later. You think George Soros, who bet against the pound and almost broke the English pound, was bad, and you're right. You think Soros, who almost broke the Malaysian currency by betting against it, provoked anti-Semitism in the Muslim world, and you're right, in my opinion. But Soros is a piker compared to a Rothschild, the original Rothschild. And how he did it is something that you got to listen to, because it was based upon rumor and innuendo to drive down the certain share prices, which he then went in and gobbled up. And Rothschild said, give me control of the currency of a country, and I don't need to control the politics. Does that sound like George Soros to you? Does that sound like the people on Wall Street today who have no loyalty to our nation and no relationship to the sovereignty, the flag, whatever you want to define it by, borders, language, culture? They define it only by controlling the currency and controlling the people through the currency. So that's what I'm saying to you. It's pretty rotten times we're living in right now, despite the fact that Phil Graham, who has to be one of the most ignorant people on the planet, to have said what he said yesterday, saying we're a nation of whiners. What is he, crazy? A nation of whiners? A former senator lives on a big fat pension, goes to work for the very investment banks that funded him for all the years he was in the Senate. They lobbied through him to throw away the great protections that were put in place on banks after the Great Depression. He threw it out after many years of lobbying. Over $300 million was funneled through him, according to my knowledge, in order to undo the protections that were inserted onto Wall Street to protect us from these gangsters and these pirates. And then he was rewarded after leaving the Senate by going to work for one of the very banks who funded him. So you tell me we don't have trouble right now? You're telling me that everything's in good shape? No, it's not in good shape. I'm worried. I am very worried about our currency. I actually have nightmares every day that I wake up that I'm going to wake up and the dollar will be worthless. I'll wake up and find out that China dumped dollars. The Saudis no longer accept dollars. The Europeans won't accept dollars. We could become like a basket country. Well, I have these visions of baskets of dollars to buy a loaf of bread, sort of the Weimar Republic model. Created after World War I in Germany by various international forces on Germany. You're saying it can't happen here? I hope you're right. I hope my fears are unfounded. I pray that better men than I think are in charge are in charge. So now play a little Jimi Hendrix, but the first one, the second one stank, because already they can't take it. There was too many paragraphs. I had to stick to the simple. Democrats bad, Republicans good. Bush a genius.
Too much confusion.
Harry Reid no good. Democrats no good. Republicans great. That's what you used to in Tokyo. Go ahead. Walk away cocktail. Keep it simple, stupid. Kiss. 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 Kiss my you know what. Kiss. I can't keep it simple, stupid.
Nobody of it is worth.
I'm warming up. Hey, look, no matter what happens, I could always be a hippie again. It doesn't matter to me. I mean, I know how to ride low. I can ride low. I can ride high. It don't matter to me. I've been in limos. I'm in limos, schmimos. What does it mean to me? I got a broken 65 Cadillac that I like more than a new Mercedes. So it doesn't matter to me. How many meals can you eat at one time? Answer one. How many suits can you wear at one time? Answer one. How many suits can you be buried in? Answer one. You get the picture? I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is. I'll play it a minute more. What's the difference if the timing's off? What do I care? I cut it any one way or the other. Play it for an hour. See if I care. I'm going to get fired. feel like doing Tai Chi on a mountaintop in Maui. Except I don't know Tai Chi, that's the problem, and I'm not in Maui.
Whatever it is, that girl put a spell on me.
You know, I turn it off. I once saw a movie. If somebody could ever tell me this movie, I'll give you a great big prize. I don't know the movie. I can't even remember it, but there was one scene over titles of like a Hell's Angel type of big guy, but he wasn't like a lithe, you know, Bruce Lee kind of body. He was stocky. He wasn't a biker, but he was built like a biker. And he was doing a slow, like, really incredible Tai Chi on a mountaintop in Maui. I don't know the movie. I love that scene. It's stuck in my head of the way to live. Like, live that way your whole life, every second, as though you're on a mountaintop. What do you know? I'm just thinking out loud here. I'm not ready to work. I was off from last Thursday. I did the barbecue Friday. Like a schmuck, I stood for 4 hours in front of a hot barbecue and no one talked to me. It's the opposite of what you expect. You invite friends over. Oh, you'll do the barbecue. So you stand there in the heat and no one comes over. They're in the house sitting and talking to each other. I'm like Mr. Schmuck there. I'm burning up. A wonderful barbecue experience. They sat with their legs up, having a drink. I'm out there burning in the sun with the fire, with the skewers, and I had good food, mind you. Nobody came out. The maid came over to take it in to them. They're sitting like princes, like I'm their worker. What's going on in this society? Then I got two emails back, thank you. No one else even said thank you for coming to the bar. Can you believe? That's it for me. As it is, I have a little trouble with people to start with. This was the last straw. Figure, what do you knock yourself out for? You're better off with the dog staring at the wind. So I go out on the boat alone. I haven't gone out on the boat for a while. I'm out of the boating thing. You ever fall out of things sometimes? It was like so windy here lately. I don't want to be on the boat now. I'm thinking of selling the boat and getting out of boating. I'm not getting mad at everything. It's just like, what's the point? I love radio more than anything on earth. That's the sad truth. And that's a sad statement, I got to tell you. That is such a sad statement. Being alone in a room with a microphone, that's what you love. That's what your ancestors struggled against the great hordes for. That's what they overcame: illness, disease, pogroms, leper. Also, you could sit alone in a room in front of a microphone? Yes. And be famous? Yes. And make a damn good look? Yes. That's why. What do you need anything else for?
Savage.
Times, even I did. Turn it off already. I don't know. I'll have to start a whole new shtick here on the show. It's like a turning point for me, July 2008. The currency's in decline. The stock market took a hit like you can't believe. I never saw anything like this. I mean, it's unbelievable what this government has done to our country. Phil doesn't have an answer, but in a minute, I'm not ready for him. So to go back to the barbecue, I'm sweating there in the sun for 3 hours. I mean, skewers, I had shrimp skewers made. Then I had beef skewers made. And it ain't take a long time to do properly. You got to turn them in the heat. Meanwhile, you're burning up like Spencer Tracy in The Hairy Ape from when you're shoveling coal in the bottom of a ship. And the sun is not cooperative, burning me in the face. The angle was all wrong, right in the barbecue. I can't roll it out of the thing. I'm burning, but you can't walk away from it. And they're inside, nice and cool, sitting their legs up. So no one's outside. I mean, like in The Sopranos, Tony cooks, and the guys hang around with a drink. And I'm standing out there with the maid. Even the dog was inside. He was smart enough then to get it. I said, I have to go in one. The skewers are ready. I'll get back. Tell me when they're well done. You hear this? Like I was a servant. So once a year I do a barbecue. That's it. It'll be once, never again. The next barbecue I go to will be in Holiday Inn. I'll go to a luau in Hawaii, like anonymously. The movie version of life, my mother was 100% right on the way to a funeral once about 25 years ago. She always had these homey little statements that I never liked at the time. But the older I get, the more these homey statements, you know, the homilies. So homey and homily, I think they're related, like hominy grits. It's not exactly homely or homily, but hominy grits are not too far apart from homely and homily when you think about it. I happen to like homily grits, but the point is I also like homilies. And so the homily was life, she said to me in the back of the car, lurching toward the the old potato field on Long Island, either the burial. I don't know, it's sad when a funerals are not fun for anybody. I don't have to tell you that. She says to me, you know, life is not paper cutouts. You can't take a scissor and just cut out people the way you want them to be. Now, who knows what she was thinking? Always a vague third-party statement. You couldn't tell with her. Everything was like Sphinx-like. Was she putting me down that I wasn't the paper doll she thought I would be when I was a little pink baby that she was able to powder? What do I know what was in her mind? But in general, the woman was right. You know what I'm saying? In you know, you can't. Has anyone really ever been who you wanted them to be? One way or the other, better for better or for worse? No. If people were exactly how you wanted them to be, you could say, well, okay, so what's the point of living? Because you know how everything's going to work out. You could take the optimist viewpoint and say it's wonderful this way because you don't know what people are going to do. It's interesting. I don't take that view. I take the pessimist viewpoint, which is that people basically suck and they're mean and they'll look to rip you off for everything and give you nothing back. By and large, that's life in America today. People are out for what they can take from you and boom. And that's it. Manny in San Antonio, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage. I just want to give you a word of encouragement. It was so nice of you to put on that barbecue for everybody. And that's just the way Americans in general are today. It's everything for me. And, you know, what harm would it have done for them to have been out there and talk to you and treat you with kindness and respect for what you were doing instead of...
Well, but it's a reflection of my foolishness to expect that from people, isn't it? And, you know, the funny thing is, though, Manny, let me tell you something. I could put on an event. I could get 5,000 to 7,000 people. They'd pay a significant amount of money. They would cheer me when I walked on the stage. I could charge for the privilege of having dinner with me the way some people do. I can auction it off for a charity, and I could get people to pay money to be with me. But, see, this is the problem, is that when you are a celebrity, however minor you may be a celebrity, you're a celebrity compared to the average. People start to take you for granted. If you become a regular guy with the average person, they will crap on you. I got to tell you that right now, Manny.
I agree with you, Dr. Savage, but I have to say...
So now I'm going to start charging my friends for phone calls by the minute. Manny, that's okay. I'm not complaining. We got an answer here. I think I got a winner. Phil in San Francisco says he knows the Tai Chi movie answer. Phil, what was the movie? Who was the character?
Dr. Savage, it was Randall X. Cobb.
Oh, you're breaking up. I want to hear this. Wait, what did you just say?
Randall X. Cobb.
Call back again on an American phone that doesn't work. Randall Cobb. Did he say Randall Cobb? I don't know who Randall Cobb is, but see if he can tell you what it was. Chicago, Illinois. Spencer, topic, please go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
This is Spencer. I work for a money management firm. Been doing it for about 15 years. You were asking about rich people who were either crazy or sensible, and I got a couple good stories for you if you're still interested.
Yeah, well,
in those.
Let's start with the first question. Are there any rich people who are not crazy?
Yeah, there's a couple of clients who are pretty down to earth. I got a guy that sold a small publishing company, and he flies a small plane out of a local airport. He's real down to earth, lets me do whatever I want with the account.
Well, usually people who can fly a plane are sane. Usually. Yeah. You can't fly an airplane and be crazy.
Nope, you're right. Well, you know, catch 22, you got to be crazy to fly jets, so I don't.
All right. Well, you got to be pretty daring to get there. I mean, when recently I flew to Maui on a private jet, and the pilots were 30 years old. These guys were amazing, and it was a G3. And I said to them, I said, "Don't take this the wrong way, but what if the engines fail? Like we were, you know, already in the air, halfway over the ocean." I ask him. He says, "Don't worry, we have a contingency plan." I said, "Well, what is it?" He said, "I said, could this plane glide?" He said, "Yes." I said, I understand that, but when it hits the water, it breaks apart. He said, it's very tricky to not have it break apart, basically, once it hits the water. So at that point, I went back and I opened had the stewardess open another bottle of wine, and that was the end of that. So tell me about the crazy rich people.
So I got a new account assigned to me years ago, and it was 2 male names and 3 female names. And the girls all had normal portfolios, municipal bonds and blue chip stocks and stuff like that. One of the men's names had some blue chips and some munis, but the biggest account, about $6 million, the others were a couple hundred thousand. The biggest account was 1 share of Berkshire Hathaway, a bunch of municipal bonds, and a whole bunch of gold mining stocks. And that didn't make sense with the others. So I asked my boss, and I looked for him. I couldn't find him. I said, what's going on with these accounts? So my manager said, call up the accountant on Long Island and get the story. So I called the accountant, and he says, didn't your boss tell you? The father, the eldest, the biggest account, took the fall for a mob hit, and he was in Sing Sing. And this guy hated the federal government so much that he took all of his money, I don't know if it's the payoff from the mob or what, and he bought municipal bonds because he hated paying taxes to the federal government. He bought the gold mining stocks because he was worried about inflation, and then he bought one share of Berkshire Hathaway because he thought the founder of that company was a self-made millionaire. It was very
well. Let me pause right here. You're a broker, aren't you?
Like a broker.
All right. He made a pretty bad bet on all accounts because gold mining stocks are down, Berkshire Hathaway is down, and muni bonds are down. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. But from his point of view, the feds put him in jail. He doesn't want to have to pay any taxes to Uncle Sam. I mean, he would have bought these gold mining stocks. I got this account in the mid-90s.
Well, I asked about crazy people who are rich. He doesn't sound crazy. Who's the crazy rich one?
I got a crazy rich one. This woman.
If I listen to two more minutes of this, I'll wind up crazy and not rich. The audience will disappear and I'll wind up in a bug house. Give me another rock and roll for a minute. That's all. I want to hear some music. Hey, wait, I got a better idea. Catalina Island is becoming a gangbanger island now. The Mexican mafia has invaded. I was there like last summer. I saw taggers. I saw the children of the gardeners and the maids, what they were becoming with the shape. It looked like Azteca. It looked like Apocalypto, the island. It looked like a minute they could come out of the bushes with spears. I wasn't supposed to notice it, but it looked like any second, it was like Apocalypto, like the volcano could erupt. So now it came out today. It's on michaelsavage.com. Did you read this? Those of you who live in California, ever come out here? Cops fear California Island is becoming gangster paradise. Even 22 miles of open. You know the song? Is it by the Beach Boys? 22 miles to Catalina. It's such a gorgeous island. It's once you get there, it's kind of like ticky tacky, you know, Coney Islandish. But the island itself is a wonder. That's the one. That's all. California is still the most beautiful place on earth. If only we didn't have a governor and mayors. Get rid of the legislature. Let the people rule that we could have a state again.
Romance.
Is that it?
Water all around it, everywhere.
So sweet.
Tropical trees and
right, hold it. Who's this? The Beach Boys? Is that it? Where's the song? It's the Preps? The Four Preps? The Four Preps. Where are they today? They own yogurt stands in Tiburon? Nothing worse than a rock and roller who made it in his 20s. Sad. At 50, I have no idea. They're like pudgy. Would you like fries with that malt? It's terrible to make it young.
26 miles so near yet far.
When I was a kid, right, turn it on. I don't want to go back to when I was a kid. I'm sick of it already. Stabbings, burglaries, graffiti. Wonderful, wonderful. They all come here to work, yeah. They come here to work the gringo. San Francisco, Dominic, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, the movie is Uncommon Valor, 1983, and the character is a guy named Sailor, and it's played by Randall Tex Cobb, a former boxer.
I don't believe this. Dominic, say it again. 1983, what's the movie?
Uncommon Valor, and it's about a father who goes back to Vietnam to rescue his son who was left behind.
Oh, my God. Now, who's the actor?
Randall Tex Cobb. He used to be a pro boxer, heavyweight boxer.
How do you know? How could you pick this up off just the one? How do you know this?
I remember when you said that and you described the guy in the mountain doing the Tai Chi. I remember that part from the movie.
So my pictographic description triggered the image in your head and you remembered it.
Yes, it did.
Well, I'm a genius at pictograms, but B, that you could pick it up and remember the movie. You must be are you an IMDb nut?
I'm not sure what that is.
So you're just, are you a movie fanatic?
No, I watch them here and there and stuff, but I do remember that movie.
That is astounding. I got to send you a free copy of my DVD, the Freedom of Speech DVD. Please stay on the line. Wow. See, I'm going to get the movie now, Uncommon Valor, Tai Chi on the Mountain. Randall Tex Cobb. See that? People know. I got an audience of people who know everything. You think they don't know? They know plenty. Jenny in Medford, Oregon. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Is the Oregon up there?
Yes. Dr. Savage, I love you. I will stand next to the barbecue in the hot sun any day.
Did you have a barbecue on July 4th, Jenny?
We actually didn't. We were too hot. We went out to eat. I was too hot to cook. But I would have.
No, that's it. It was too hot for me to cook, but I did it anyway. Thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255. You know, that's a good story on the website. I don't, before it's dropped from the website, which will probably be tomorrow, there's a very important article on the bottom right. CAIR condemns Michael Savage. They won't let it go. Nice fellow with a nice beard with lovely eyes. Nice Middle Eastern fellow who is trying to drive me off the radio with a few liberal lawyers here in San Francisco. That's an important story. Then, of course, my article, Making the World Safe for Theocracy, you have to print and save. It's an original. The secret bailout of J.P. Morgan, insider trading looted Bear Stearns and the American taxpayer by Global Research, is an article that you must print and read. I didn't write it. But I tell you the truth, it's got so much in it, I can't do it on the radio. It's too complicated. All you got to know is that the bailout of Wall Street, which has just begun, and it's going to get much worse. Fannie Mae, Fannie Mac, you're going to pick up the number on that one. The gangsters are not through with you yet. Until you can roll a wheelbarrow to the supermarket for a lamb chop and a pack of spaghetti. They won't be happy till spaghetti's $10 a pound. Then they'll say, we better stop right now because there's liable to be a revolution. But this article by Ellen Brown, The Secret Bailout of J.P. Morgan, How Insider Trading Looted Bear Stearns, the American Taxpayer. Let me start it, and then I'm going to take a break. Listen to what she writes. The mother of all insider trades was pulled off in 1815 when London financier Nathan Rothschild led British investors to believe that the Duke of Wellington had lost to Napoleon at the Battle of Waterloo. In a matter of hours, British government bond prices plummeted. Rothschild, who had advanced information, then swiftly bought up the entire market in government bonds, acquiring a dominant holding in England's debt for pennies on the pound. Over the course of the 19th century, N.M. Rothschild would become the biggest bank in the world, and the five brothers would come to control most of the foreign loan business of Europe. Quote, Rothschild said in 1838, "Let me issue and control a nation's money, and I care not who writes its laws." And then the article goes on to J.P. Morgan, and then it concludes with the Federal Reserve Bank today and what the gangsters have just done to you on Wall Street and what they're about to do you in the United States of America, and why our currency is in trouble, why gas has doubled, and why you're being lied to by the government. It's an amazing article. You got to read this thing. Oh, there's one other footnote in this article. This is an astounding one. Remember the governor of New York, Elliot Spitzer, and the hooker thing? I'll go into it when I come back, and why these people in the Federal Reserve actually did Spitzer in to get him out of the picture. It's so unbelievable. I'll be back. Savage. Nice to be in the seventh grade and have a party to go to tonight in a finished basement. Nice. Look forward to something. I turn it off already. So anyway, so the gangsters of Wall Street bust out Bear Stearns. The whole thing is a setup. It's an insider trading deal to blow off a competitor. Elliot Spitzer, right? You know who he was? New York governor. What was he doing? Spitzer made the mistake of getting in the way of a $200 billion windfall from the Federal Reserve to the banks, guaranteeing the mortgage-backed junk bonds of the same banking predators responsible for the subprime debacle. And while the Federal Reserve was trying to bail the banks out, Spitzer was trying to regulate them, and he brought suit on behalf of consumers. What happened next? The gangsters used private detectives to expose Spitzer with the hooker thing, so they can continue with their shenanigans. And that's exactly what happened. And the article says, like the panic of 1907 that justified a banker's bank to prevent future runs, the collapse of Bear Stearns has been used to justify a proposal giving vast new powers to the Federal Reserve to promote, quote, financial market stability. Who unveiled the plan? Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson. Who is he? Former head of Goldman Sachs. Don't you understand what I'm saying to you? They're taking away all authority from regulators, state or federal, and turning it over to a private group of friends in the a private group of friends that they put into the SEC. All future regulation is now going to be subsumed under the Federal Reserve, and this bank-owned entity was set up by Pierpont Morgan in 1913 specifically to preserve his bank's own interests. So the Federal Reserve is not a public entity. It's a private entity. They are the ones responsible for this. And in any sane country, they'd be held responsible for this kind of activity. Do you understand this? Again, I knew this was too complicated for a radio show. But for those of you who are interested in what went on and what's going on and why gas is $5 a gallon, go to my website, michaelsavage.com, and read The Secret Bailout of J.P. Morgan, How Insider Trading Looted Bear Stearns and the American Taxpayer by Ellen Brown. It's such an eye-opener. And then you'll find out why Elliot Spitzer, the New York governor, and the Hooker debacle suddenly became such a big story. They knew what he was doing. They knew his proclivities, and they nailed him on his weakness. They held it for the right moment. He was a little naive, I got to tell you right now. The guy was an idiot for what he was doing. He had to pay for a hooker with a credit card and an offshore account. I mean, the guy was a putz. So what I'm saying is he was stupid enough to be a governor. He didn't have to do this. He didn't have to do the hooker thing that way. He could have paid cash, for example, in a local whatever, if that's what he really wanted to do, by what I've read. He didn't have to go the route of a credit card to an offshore company. So they watched this guy. You know, you got $200 billion at stake. You're going to watch who might be regulating you. And you're also going to put a crony into the SEC, someone from Harvard with a nice white shirt and tie who looks like Joe Palooka, who should have been watching the foxes, but instead was just a chicken put in there by the foxes in the hen house, handpicked by George Bush to make sure the foxes never got caught eating the chickens and the eggs. What's next? It's anyone's guess where this ends. It's the Savage Nation. Be here.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, turn it off. You didn't. I thought I'd like Pantera. I didn't. How about there's no England anymore? Let's try that. I asked a question last hour, and I'm not going to ask it again because it's boring. We're through with it. But in case you just joined us, we talked about where have all the evangelicals gone and why have they been made silent in this country? I can give you the answer. And I figure, do you know a super wealthy person who was crazy? And then I reversed it to, do you know a super wealthy person who was not crazy? And then we talked about the bailout of Wall Street and what's coming and how the Federal Reserve is a group of bankers themselves who are protecting their own interests. So play There's No England Anymore, because soon there'll be no United States anymore.
Of kings in days of old, but there's no England now. All the wars that were won or lost somehow don't seem to matter very much anymore. All the lies we were told, all the lies shots of the people running round, their castles are burned.
Their castles are burned. Their castles are burned.
I see change, the inside.
Their castles are burned. All the English women are now making it with each other. Because the castles are burned. Where do all the Englishmen go? Were they all killed in the Battle of Britain? Left the louts? Pub drunks? All the other guys go to Brussels for a visit? San Francisco, turn it off already. I'm in a rotten mood. I don't know what's wrong. There must be the weather. Making the world safe for theocracy. I can't get that off my mind. So what I'll do is, Beowulf, do you have the monologue from yesterday ready to play? Get it ready, because I think it was the most brilliant thing I've written in years. And I have to replay it at least one more time before retiring it to the archives. Because it shouldn't be lost on the audience. I don't understand this. You have to understand what's at stake. And I'll play it in a minute, but first I want to take a call right here on my local station, KNEW. By the way, I have a little announcement to make. I have re-signed, re-signed, not resigned, I have re-signed with KNEW, a Clear Channel station, here in my home market of San Francisco, and I'm happy to tell you that. It was quite an experience getting here, but here I am as the most prominent radio star in the San Francisco area. By far, I mean, there's nobody else out of this area who's a national host. That's number one. But I have the third largest show in the country. But in a local station, I'm on KNEW, 910 on the dial, and I'm glad to be the same place I've been for the last 5 years. Let's go to the callers. Kamal on KNEW, San Francisco. Kamal, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I wanted to make a brief comment regarding your brilliant article thesis, Making the World Safe for Theocracy. I mean, you were right on all the way just by reading that article. It was just brilliant, brilliant piece. And the thing is,
Why is this article, Making the World Safe for Theocracy, not being widely disseminated on the internet and in the media? Are these people so stupid that because they hate my politics, they can't understand that I'm trying to warn them, like Churchill warned England, what is going on here with their government and the fact that the government's asleep at the switch while our enemies never sleep? I'll tell you what we're going to do, Kamal. Thank you for the call. Play the piece right now. Play it, Beowulf. Making the world safe for theocracy, says Michael Savage. It begins like this. If you'd like to read along, go to michaelsavage.com and follow the bouncing tongue. Theocratic Iran continues to challenge Western democracies, I write. Missiles designed to do in 6 minutes what Hitler did in 6 years to 6 million Jews were test-fired by this radical Islamic theocracy. The Hitler of Iran has threatened to kill every Jewish person in Israel, even if it costs Iran 50% of its population. Iran has imprisoned British sailors, sent a fleet of rubber boats against gigantic U.S. warships. But where is a strong statement from our president? Where is the bold warning against an enemy who has threatened us and our allies again and again? Nowhere. Silence and weak words are all that have come out of the White House in the West. Now, this is not the first time a nation led by a despot built up its military in defiance of the international community. In the 1930s, I will remind you, Adolf Hitler cast aside the restrictions on the size of his military imposed on Germany after World War I and created the Wehrmacht and the Luftwaffe. Now the Hitler of Iran is launching missiles, flaunting his nation's nuclear technology, and threatening to shut down the Strait of Hormuz. Israel may act against Iran, but with the corrupt weakling Olmert in power, even this most basic act of self-preservation is in doubt. Bush, the Chamberlain of our time, refuses to act. All he does is rattle the sabers of the Fifth Fleet. And why won't Bush act to save Western democracies from this madman? One, he doesn't want to rock the boat because of his ties to the Seven Sister Oil Companies, and two, because he's writing his legacy. Bush wants liberal journalists and historians to write books about what a great statesman and peacemaker he really was. And so, to fuel his own vanity, he lets the cancer of Iran metastasize and spread throughout the world. If Bush were to unleash the military might of the United States on this petty dictator and seize control of the Iranian oil fields, we could regain control of the Middle East, boost John McCain's poll numbers, greatly reduce oil prices, and save Israel from a second Holocaust. Instead, Bush has decided to make the world safe for theocracy. And that's something everyone but the far-left Democrats understand we have to fight. I'm Michael Savage, and I approve of my monologue. Well, that was yesterday. Today is today. Now you understand what I'm talking about. It's phenomenal. Now, news just came out. If you want to comment on that, 1-800-449-8255, you can still read it on michaelsavage.com, download it and print it. This just came out minutes ago. IndyMac Bank seized by federal regulators. The federal government said it took control of troubled IndyMac Bank today, Friday, in what regulators call the second largest bank failure in U.S. history. The Office of Thrift Supervision in Washington, the chief regulator of Pasadena-based IndyMac Bank, said it transferred control of the $32 billion bank to the FDIC. Listen to this. The FDIC will reopen the bank on Monday, as IndyMac Federal Bank, the OTS, said. IndyMac's failure had been widely expected in recent days, as its stock has plummeted to mere pennies a share, and some nervous depositors have been pulling their funds. The bank has been reeling from losses on defaulted mortgages, made at the height of the housing boom. IndyMac's failure is second only to the 1984 failure of Continental Illinois Bank, which had assets of $40 billion at the time. So it's the beginning, my friends. It's the beginning. There's only so much wool that can be pulled over so many eyes for so much time. I don't want to be the prognosticator of doom, but I think only a fool would not see what's going on here. If you care to comment on this, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Grand Rapids, Michigan. Kevin, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I believe depression's imminent, and I think Bernanke is propping up these banks as long as possible, basically so the big shots can empty their money out so that us little guys can be out blowing in the wind.
Yeah, so the friends of Wall Street and of the government can move their stocks into euros, and we'll be left with a currency that's greatly devalued. That's what I fear.
And you know what? I want to thank you personally. Because of your show, you convinced me to invest half of my assets into Swiss America. And if it weren't for my wife, I'd put all of it. I wouldn't have a dime in the stock market. But she still thinks, oh, you know, gold speculation and stock market is investing. Isn't that
a lot? Look, that company is a great supporter of my show right from the beginning. And I can't comment because it ceases to be an advertisement if I start commenting during a show, and I can't do that. But I think you did the right thing here. But we have not yet seen the bottom of what's coming here. I think we've only seen the beginning of it. When we read yesterday that Fannie Mae and Fannie Mac were in deep trouble because of mortgages that they made, and that we're going to bail out, meaning the taxpayers are going to be forced to bail out Fannie Mae and Fannie Mac, I think the beginning of the whole debacle has been seen, certainly not the end of it. Thank you for the call. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Portland, Oregon. Sean, you're up on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Dr. Savage, maybe you can set me straight on some American history, but it's my understanding that during the Great Depression, we had organized left-wing groups like the communists and the socialists, and the liberals then came along and said, hey, we're going to protect capitalism from these radicals, and that's how we got a well-regulated capitalist system. So long as we don't have a functioning left in this country, how are we ever going to get those regulations back in place?
Well, you're setting me up for a no-win situation. You're assuming that everyone who wanted regulation was a liberal. I don't make that assumption. I would assume that there were some conservatives who also wanted regulation. Don't assume that Republicans are conservatives. There's a chasm between Republicanism and conservatism that's insurmountable that I've pointed out numerous times, Sean. So until we know the actual names of the people who regulated the banks and the stock market, I can't comment. I don't believe they were all liberals, number one. However, let's go to the main point. Does Wall Street need to be regulated? Yes. Was the SEC set up to do that? Yes. But Bush came along with his deregulation. Bush put in Chris Cox as the head of the SEC, who fundamentally permitted a rampant Wild West style of investing with fraudulent financial fiduciary instruments to be created that were totally out of bounds for any sane person who wanted to see a sane banking system and a sane stock system. In fact, The fiduciary instrument called the hedge funds were fundamentally functioning without any regulation whatsoever. And they are the instruments that pull down the rest of Wall Street and the Wall Street banks with them. I can't say this is a liberal or a conservative or a Republican or a Democrat situation, Sean. I can say this, that big money needs to be regulated. And big money, unfortunately, right now is running the government. That is the problem.
I couldn't agree more.
All right. So it's not Democrats, Republicans. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So I'm sitting here in the radio studio in San Francisco, high atop the tower, and I'm looking out on San Francisco Bay towards Alcatraz, and here comes a big ship laden to the gunwales with God knows what from China, NYK line, loaded, you know, one container after another, filled with the stuff that we buy from them. And you know what these ships are going back to China with? Raw lumber, logs, and scrap metal. We're sending them the raw materials, and they're sending us finished products. And thanks to this wonderful Congress that we have, one factory after another is being closed down in America. This is an amazing story to watch this going on in front of our eyes. And if you think this is not related to open borders, if you think this is not related to the drug epidemic, if you think this is not related to the Wall Street feast that is going on, you are mistaken. It's all interrelated. If I had the ability, I'd write a new play called The Glass Seagull by Tennessee Chekhov for the illiterate amongst you. But I will not write about The Glass Seagull. I would like to tell you about the Glass-Steagall Act, because that's what's important. The Glass-Steagall Act of 1933 was set in place to create banking reforms, to control speculation, and it created the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. What happened was all of these acts were repealed in 1999 by the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act, Phil Graham. The very same Phil Graham who called Americans whiners was the front man for the $300 million lobbying effort by banks to repeal the Glass-Steagall Act of 1933. That is why we have this rampant piracy going on in the financial markets. Play Phil Graham right now.
You just hear this constant whining, complaining about our loss of our competitiveness, America in decline. We've never been more dominant. We've never had more natural advantages than we have today. We've sort of become a nation of whiners.
Now, I don't know whether that's Rush Limbaugh or Phil Graham. It's hard to tell the difference. I realize that they're both speaking from the same well of stupidity. But on November 12, 1999, President Bill Clinton signed into law the Phil Graham-Leach Act, which repealed the protections that the Glass-Steagall Act of 1933 afforded this nation. What did it allow? It allowed commercial and investment banks to consolidate. The repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act contributed to the 2007 subprime mortgage financial crisis. And that's why financial firms are collapsing, because of rampant speculation and gambling and the creation of fiduciary instruments such as hedge funds that were trading without any controls whatsoever. And you have not seen the end of this debacle. You've only seen the beginning. Now, I have a very important question. I have a fairly expensive new convertible. It has very low miles, like 1,500 miles after 2 years. I took it into the dealer for, a polishing. They made a big mistake, a detailing. I didn't ask them to do it because the interior was like from the factory. They let some moron put some cleaner on the leather. This is 2 months later. The car now smells like a national car rental that's been sitting in the heat at an airport. I've been back and forth with the dealer. They're telling me to do that. Now, they've already tried already with the washing and the water. It stinks. You get in the car, it doesn't smell like leather. It smells like a caustic, acrid aroma. So I've been going back and forth with them, and I said, you better fix this or I'm going to make you take the car back. And now they're getting, you know, okay, bring it in, and the manufacturer of the product will lend us an ionizing machine to take out any smell. Do you believe that that will work? Is there a car interior or a car leather person who can call the Savage Nation and tell me how to get this acrid aroma out of my car? It's been two straight months. It's a direct result of a faulty product that was put on my leather by the dealer. I happen to know California law. I'm not ready to enact and pull that switch. Is there a simple solution? 1-800-449-8255 that can get that acrid odor out of my car.
Savage.
So look, we're touching on the high, the low, and the medium here. I went from the Glass-Steagall Act, the Glass Seagull by Tennessee Chekhov, making the world safe for theocracy, where have all the evangelicals gone? And now we're down to the basics, which is I have a fairly new convertible, very expensive. The dealer details the car. I tell him, don't touch the interior. The idiot puts some stuff on the seats. It stinks now for 2 months. No matter what I do, it smells. The acrid odor is that of a car rental, like a national car rental, to pick one out at an airport, that kind of stink. I don't understand why they would do this to a car of this value. And they're telling me, well, I tried everything. Are you overly sensitive? I hate when people tell me I'm overly sensitive. I mean, look who they're talking to. So now they're saying, well, bring it in and we'll put an ionizer in it. Sacramento, Gail, have you had experience with this ionizer?
Absolutely. We have a 96 Dodge pickup that we bought used about 7 years ago from a neighbor. And unfortunately, we didn't realize it till summertime came, but evidently a male cat had sprayed more than once, obviously, on the seat. And it was under the part where the little console thing comes down, so we obviously didn't smell it till one of us went to sit in the middle. And it
all
was
right, so you're saying in another way, you tried the ionizer and it took out that odor?
Took out that odor, but it took two times. And it was
okay, I'm going to try. Well, I may try it. Ohio, Martin. Now, I didn't say it has an Akron odor. I said it has an acrid odor. So I know you're calling from Ohio. I wasn't putting down Akron. Auto detailer from New York is calling now. Mike, go ahead, please. Mike, what will take that acrid odor out?
The product that you that I use on the insides of my cars is called Zeno Leather Soft Spray Cleaner, and also leather in a bottle. You don't even have to use that much of it. Just a very little. It makes the leather smell like brand new, and it leaves it nice and supple.
But will it take the stink out from the product that they already put on the leather?
Should. It should. It should. As long as it, the leather itself, you said it was clean. Is it clean right now?
Like new. The car was, let me explain. I keep my cars like in showroom condition. The car was perfect. I bring it in just to keep it up. It didn't even need it. You know what I'm saying? So I said, polish the car. He goes and gives it to some jerk who puts the stuff on the leather and the rugs. The thing stinks. He says to me, oh, blah, 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 it'll go away. It's 2 months now. It won't go away. They sent the guy out with a water thing and try to wash it over with water. It doesn't leave it. So now they say, well, bring it in and we'll put an ionizer in it. Will that work?
I don't think it would.
All right. You see, now I got to be careful. I don't want to make it worse. Here's a saddle maker. Now I'm getting down to it. I knew this topic would be good. Ben in Klamath is a saddle maker. He's going to give me the lowdown on leather. Ben, what would you recommend? How do I save my leather?
Well, sir, what I would do is I would try to convince the dealership to replace the seats.
Oh, well, that should be real easy.
When you got the car back, did it make the seats real shiny? I mean, did they have a gloss to them when you got them?
Not really, but I made him disclose the name of the product to me the other day. And the manufacturer sent it and is, you know, non-toxic and supposed to be, you know, for sensitive personalities, blah, blah, blah. But all I can tell you is the smell is that of a rental car after a thorough cleaning. And that's not what an expensive car should smell like. It should smell like leather, correct?
That's correct. It should smell like leather.
Well, I'm still at a loss as to whether the ozonator is going to work, Ben, but thanks for calling. One last call on the leather stink. Martin in Ohio, welcome. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael. I can't really speak specifically about the leather, although the one thing with the guy that mentioned the thing that puts the smell, like leather smell, back in, that might work after you use the ozonator.
No. I don't want to go for a trick. That's like Viagra. I don't believe in those things. In other words, why use Viagra? In other words, if you're not attracted, what do you need Viagra for? So it's the same with like a dummy fake leather smell. I have an expensive convertible that should smell like leather. I don't want to trick it up like it's a cheap car. You know, on Norgahyde, so to speak. Sacramento, Stu, what would you do to get this acrid odor out of leather?
My brother had a gallon of paint that was filled in his car. He took a bushel of...
Ho, you're breaking up. Get a gallon of what?
A gallon of paint thinner was filled in his car, and he took a bushel of apples and cut them in half and let them sit in his car for 24 hours, and it took the smell out.
Are you making this up?
No, absolutely not, Michael.
You're saying that the apples absorbed the smell of paint thinner?
Yes, it did. He said that the whole gallon had spilled in the car, and when he bought the car, it was terrible. The guy said, cut apples, put them in there for 24 hours, and it'll take the smell out. His whole family.
You know what? I got two apple trees in bloom right now, one green apples and one red apples. I'm going to try it. You know why? Have you ever noticed that when you cut an apple, if you leave it exposed to the air, it oxidizes and turns a sort of brownish color? Apples rapidly oxidize. That's very interesting when you think about the chemical changes of an apple and how powerful fruits really are. I also have an apricot tree that's just been blooming because of the heat. Oh, my God, I love them. I love apricots, my favorite food. I fed them to the children when they were young. One of the greatest foods on earth is an apricot. I'll try the apple thing. This is the last call on leather now. Fernando in San Francisco, your opinion, how do we get that stink out of the leather?
Well, the ionizer, that's just a dealer trying to put one over on you. It only does is cleans the air. Basically, whatever they sprayed on your leather chemically changed the odor, because the leather, natural leather has a chemical odor to it. So the only thing, I concur with the previous caller, you need to have the leather replaced. You're only going to patchwork it or cover it up.
So the ionizer will only change the air. It's not going to change what they did to the leather. That's what I thought.
Yeah, no. I do work for rental.
No, I said to the dealer, I said, you have a choice. You can either replace the car, replace the seats, or I'm going to sue you. Because I've been a nice guy for 2 months, and I've been given the runaround. And they tell me, oh, you're overly, you know, sensitive. No one else has ever complained. I've heard this all my life. I'm the only one who ever complained. You know, that's what they tell everybody in a restaurant when the food's no good. No one else ever complained. Well, you know what? So I'll be the first one. What is, I didn't ask for this junk to be put on my seats. They are in trouble here in the state of California. They shouldn't have done it to me. And they should treat me a lot better, because very soon I'll divulge the name of the car. John in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. John, you own a leather shop. What would you recommend?
Box of Arm & Hammer baking soda in a gallon of water and wet it with a sponge and just run it over your seats.
You think the sodium bicarbonate will absorb that junk they put on the seat?
It should, but if it doesn't, I don't know what kind of crazy chemicals they put on your car, but I would get it new seats. But that should take care of it, the sodium bicarbonate.
And will it dry the leather out?
No, I mean, no, don't put it soaking, dripping, wet, but like a damp, you know, stick the sponge in there, squeeze it, and just run it over your seats.
Amazing. See, this is what I love about my show. We can talk about the Glass-Steagall Act. We could talk about making the world safe for theocracy. And we could talk about a stink in leather seats. And, you know, never underestimate the average American who's listening to talk radio, particularly this show, because we'll go high and low on the same keyboard. That's the beauty of talk radio, and that's what I love about this show, because it's all important to me. When it comes down to it, as I said to you, the ancient Romans, I once told you that Cato the Elder, a Roman historian, wrote that the average Roman in those times did not care about what the legions were doing far, far away from Rome. What the average Roman cared about was the pebble in his shoe. He cared about the cost of bread, the cost of olive oil. He cared about taxation. That's whether the streets were clean and paved. And you know what? Nothing's changed in 2,000 years. That's fundamentally what most Americans care about. And that's why I'm telling you, a stinking leather seat and a stinking Wall Street are about the same interest to me and to you. Houston, Texas. Joe, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks, sir.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
Joe, go ahead.
I work for an industrial fragrance company in Houston, and basically what you need to use on your seats are phenols that are used to actually tan leather.
So we need to use phenolic compounds to remove what now has become bonded to the leather itself?
That's correct. There are only a couple of companies in the nation that...
Well, I'm not going to do any of this. I know what's coming. They're going to do the ozone treatment and say, well, there really is no smell. Then I'm gonna have to use California law on this because there's a lemon law. And if they created the lemon, they're gonna eat it, not me.
Right.
And you're talking about a car with 1,500 miles on it after 2 years or 2,000 miles that is absolutely showroom condition, mint, kept under a cover in a locked garage. And this is done to a car like this by some idiot moron? He puts it on a seat like it's a car that was taken in from a car rental? I never saw anything like this, why a dealer would do this to a customer.
There are a lot of guys out there that put fragrances on seats that have no business doing that. I agree.
Okay, thanks for the call. Well, all right, it's enough with it already, unless there's something new. 1-800-449 here. Las Vegas, Nick, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, I just want to warn you, Dr. Savage, not to use that Apple trick because it might take out the foul smell, but you won't be able to get rid of the Apple smell. I tried this myself.
Hey, then I can become Johnny Appleseed in the car after that.
That's
oh,
right.
You mean then the car smells of apples after that? That's amazing. That's astounding. So you can't replace one stink with another. Then you still have a stink. All right, here, look at these calls. I love it. San Francisco, Chad has another restore idea. Chad, what would you recommend?
You know, Doc, I restore older cars, and I work on motorcycles. One of the things with the old cars, a lot of times you get them, they're real musty. You just get yourself some cat litter, standard old, you know, non-scented cat litter, cut the top open of the box, and just set it in there. It'll absorb just about any smell you can imagine.
But what about the product that they put on the leather? Now, remember, the leather was perfect, factory perfect, very expensive car. Then they put this garbage on it as though it's a junk car that came in from a rental company and they need to scour it. Isn't it possible that they ruined the leather permanently by having this material bond with my leather?
It's possible. Through motorcycle things, you know, obviously leather gloves, leather jackets, pants, things like that. I've used a product called Lexol. They have a cleaner and a conditioner, and it's the best stuff I've ever used.
But does it take out aromas?
Yeah, I just put it on with my bare hands. It makes your hands feel great, too.
Okay. Well, I won't go there. I mean, I know we live in San Francisco, but I don't know about using Lexol for personal relief, you know. Missouri Lil, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Hi, Mr. Savage. I'm so glad to get to talk to you. I work for a car dealership. And what you need to check on your repair order, what did they write down that you were going to have done to the vehicle? If it was
all it said was detail. That's all it said, detail.
And to the detail person, detail means inside and out. If you signed that, unfortunately...
Well, I could have signed it, but it doesn't mean that I agreed to have my leather ruined.
That would be a contention for you in court, that you told them polish...
Well, but wait, by your logic, if I write detail and the guy puts a caustic polish on my paint and ruins the paint, does that mean I have they have no liability if they use the product that ruined the paint? Of course they'd have liability. And it's the same thing here. They use the substance on the leather that ruined the leather.
And that's why I was trying to say, if you have that repair order and go to them and say, I did not say detail. I said polish only.
Well, I didn't say polish only. They should have known that the car was like new inside. There was no need to do the interior. But again, everything is by cookie cutter, you know. They treat every car as though it's a piece of garbage that just came in from a mud race, even those that look pristine. And that's the problem with the world today, is that I found out that unless I micromanage everything in my life, something goes wrong from top to bottom. I get a guy to fix a sink, so he'll break something. You get a guy to paint, so he'll drip something. Whatever you do, unless you're standing over people, look, people don't care about other people, and the day of craftsmanship is over. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Obama's going to Germany to make it look as though he has foreign policy experience. Why Germany, I'll never know. I mean, I don't know whether he's going to repeat Ich bin ein Berliner a la JFK at the Brandenburg Gates. I can't imagine what his statement would be when he speaks in Germany, nor why he is going there. I haven't any idea why an assemblyman, a ward politician from Chicago, would think he can fool anybody with foreign policy experience that is nil by going to a I mean, he's basically like a tourist going to Germany, you know? Vinny in Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Yeah, don't do anything to your leather. You can make a claim with your insurance company. I used to be an appraiser over 10 years.
Oh, interesting. You mean let them go after the dealer?
No, go directly to the insurance company, the appraiser, which would be me, let's say. I come, I analyze it. If it could be cleaned, and I say it can be cleaned, they do the process. If it doesn't work, we get you the leather. If you do anything to the leather or the inside of the car, you will be paying 15% to 20% or more as damages for repair.
No, I didn't touch it. I have not touched it myself. Look, they cannot put new leather on these seats. These seats would have to be removed and replaced from the factory. There's no way to put new leather on these seats.
They would replace it. The chemical, whatever they put on, outgassed with the leather, it's no good anymore. If they have a trick to fix it, they have to get this approved with the insurance company. Your car is insured. You must give a call to your insurance company.
I think it's gone on for 2 months now, and I don't like the runaround I've been given. I don't like the treatment. I don't like the double talk. And I'm really surprised that they would do it this way. But I agree with you. I didn't think of it. Because I don't like to make claims. I don't like to hire lawyers. But if I have to, I will. They certainly have a purpose in life. And it's their mistake, not mine.
An attorney, because all you have to do is make a claim. It costs you nothing as far as deductible goes, because they'll subrogate against the dealership.
But wait a minute, won't it jack up my insurance costs?
100%. You have zero responsibility for this. You did nothing. It's not your fault. There's no 80-20, 90-10. They did it. They pay. It's 100%. I used to pay claims like that all the time.
Time. So the adjuster could say to the dealer, make this right by putting in new seats.
Estimate, the insurance company will pay $15,000-$20,000 for the new seats, the springs, the foam backing is probably damaged. It has an order. It all goes out. They order brand new from the factory. All they do is snap it in. That's it. No seats.
No, wait. You mean they roll the seats out and roll the seats in, right?
They take the four bolts off the bottom. They disconnect the electrical system. They put a brand new seat in. Boom, you're done.
That's it. That's what I think should be done. I'm not going to drive a convertible. Every time I get in that car, it's nauseating. I don't even want to drive it.
It's a BMW. They get a brand.
No, it's not. No, it's not a BMW. They did not touch a BMW. I don't want to name the brand of car right now. I'm going to let it lie until we get some resolution. But if I don't get resolution, I'll be very happy to name the dealer and the brand. I won't do it now. I like this, Vinny. I wish you were my adjuster.
You're not going to have any problem.
Can I get you a round trip ticket from Florida?
I'll come. I'll bring the pizza too.
I never met a Vinny I didn't like. Thanks for the call. You see, I like basic, down to earth people who talk turkey. In this case, they talk leather. See, this guy came up with the right answer. Don't touch it. Stop already with the dealer. Stop letting them eat your heart out. Don't waste any more of your valuable time. Boom, make an insurance claim. That's it. I need an ozone machine in the car. I mean, why don't they go in there and chant? They can get somebody with a feather coming out of their ear. And someone go and do the Hare, they can dance with the midgets, can do Hare Krishna inside the car. Maybe the smell will go out. I saw a Bombay Wedding the other night on TV. I love that movie. And I like Indian people in general. I get along with. I don't know why. I've never had an argument with a Hindu in my life. How is that possible? An entire religion. I never had an argument with a Hindu. And I've met plenty of Hindus. Fiji, I met Hindus. Graduate school, I met Hindus. I always get along with Hindus. I don't know what. It's their religion. It's the most accommodating religion on earth. The view of the world through Hinduism. They don't argue with you. I don't understand how they could be so understanding and accommodating. Certain people are like that. You know, the other side, of course. I don't want to have to say it and drop the other side. There are people and religions and cultures that they get along with nobody. Everyone is no good, should be killed and have their head cut off. You fill in the blank. It's a short answer test for Friday.
Mercedes!
I want Mercedes! Sister has Mercedes! I have Buick! You said get me Mercedes! You bought me nothing! I want big Mercedes like sister in Brooklyn!
Bollywood.
I used to listen to this music in Fiji during the heavy rains when I was collecting plants. I'd sit in that motel there. drinking gin and the tonic and listened to this music. I loved it in a way. Relaxed me. Watched the ship slipping out of Suva Harbor. I think I ought to go back to Fiji and be forgotten and just collect plants until I die.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, we're just playing with music today. I can't even do the pantomime right now. We've talked about where have all the evangelicals gone. Are they still a player in the American political system? Of course they are. Of course they are. It's just McCain, I almost said Bush. McCain has given you the middle finger. You don't matter. Conservatives don't matter. He can't get elected. We have talked about the Federal Reserve Bank. And what a scam it is. We have talked about Wall Street and what a game it is. We have talked about the fact that the federal government has shut down a huge bank, and it's only the beginning of the shutdowns. We have talked about the fact that inflation has cut your income by approximately 50% over the last year. We have talked about the fact that that moron, Phil Graham, who was John McCain's financial advisor, had the nerve to call America a nation of whiners. Simply because he lives in a bubble created by himself and Congress. And, of course, we connected it to the Glass-Steagall Act of 1933, which was designed to control speculation, which brought about the last Great Depression. And it was none other, and never forget what I'm about to tell you, it was none other than Phil Graham, the very same Phil Graham who used approximately $300 million supplied by banks to repeal the Glass-Steagall Act in 1999, under Bill Clinton, by the way, with the Graham-Leach Act, which repealed the 1933 Glass-Steagall Act. And what happened as a result of this was the subprime mortgage financial crisis, rampant speculation, and now, of course, everything else that's following. If you look at the mortgage collapses, you may see a $600 billion loss, according to one bank. And one of the reasons banks are losing money is the repeal 9 years ago of the 1933 Glass-Steagall Act. And who uncoupled the Glass-Steagall Act to protect us from the pirates of Wall Street? It was the banks themselves using Phil Graham. Now, I know you don't want to hear that Phil Graham and John McCain are connected, but you got to hear it. You just got to hear it. I'm sorry. And then we talked about leather. We talked about the fact that I have an expensive convertible, very low mileage, bought it new, keep it like showroom, brought it to the dealer simply as a maintenance item. The car looked new, but I figure after 2 years it should be waxed. Little did I know the detailer would go in the interior and treat it like a car that was in a rental shop. And he used some caustic garbage on the leather. 2 months later, it stinks acrid aroma like a car rental at an airport. Like that they would put in with someone with heavy ashes and they have to put the... So I've been going back and forth with the dealer, and the dealer's giving me the runaround. Now he's saying, bring it in. We'll put an ozone machine in there. And I know this is just nonsense. It's not going to work. So as the story ended in the last hour, Vinny from Florida, who's an adjuster for an insurance company, said, just forget the dealer. Go to your insurance agent and make a claim. Don't touch the seats. Let the insurance agent come out. Explain to him what the smell is. He'll know it right away. Because you open a door, it doesn't smell like a leather. It stinks, okay? They destroyed the leather. And let him go to the dealer and say, replace the seats or replace the car. That's all. I'm through with it. See, I'm too nice to people. At the end of the day, I want to get along. I want to be very Hindu about life. I want to accommodate people, even their mistakes. But at a certain point, you got to stand up for yourself because people will take advantage of you. It's that simple. From the top to the bottom, whether it's the banks on Wall Street or a car detailer. If they make a mistake, they have to pay for it, not me. What about nice guy? I don't want to get in a car that my eyes smart every time I get in it. Oh, you're the only one who's ever complained that we use this compound before. I don't care if no one else complains. Most people don't have a nose on them. They smoke cigars in their car. What do they know what they smell? They don't know what they eat. I know what I eat. I have the refined tastes of my smell is very, very acute. I will tell you that. It's as sharp as some animals. I have very, very highly refined ears, hearing, and smell. That doesn't mean I'm wrong. They ruin the leather. If I go in a restaurant, I can smell when fish is bad. Well, anyway, that's where we're at. Fed shut a bank in Indiana. And it's just the beginning, my friends. It's certainly not the end. 1-800-449-8255. Is the phone number. Don't miss michaelsavage.com before the articles are removed tomorrow. Roger, quickly, in Indiana, what do you call what topic? Go ahead, please.
What my point is, I got two. One, anything they put on porous leather changes it forever. You know that.
Yes.
My point is if you do the insurance thing and you go through there and they start replacing the seats, you got another problem that's going to pop up. Die batch. You got to, you know, you're going to have to be real careful that the seats they put in it will match the rest of the leather.
Oh, my God. You're right. The dashboard and the doors. This is like a custom built car. It is very expensive. You're right. And it was built 3 years ago. OK, you're absolutely right. And there's no way to rip leather off a door. We're talking about a major problem here. I think it would be less expensive for them to replace the whole car, by the way, with a new car. Than it would be to start ripping out seats and leather.
I think I would agree with you there. It's
all right. Well, that's a very interesting point. Thank you very much for that, for the die batch. That's right. There's no way to match it to that leather because it was all made at the same time. It's a custom made leather. That's right. They make the leather in one batch. It's all matched. The guy just saved me a big headache here. Then we have mismatched seats in the car. Right. I think it's going to be easier for the dealer at the end of the day to take the car back and sell it, because the next guy probably won't even know the difference, since most people's sense of smell has been ruined by cigarettes and cigars, coffee, and diesels and buses. I am still very intact when it comes to that. I'm like very, very, very sharp. I didn't buy this car to smell a car rental seat. In a few seconds, we got an interview that you're not going to forget. About Islam in the schools, how they're killing Christianity and promoting Islam. Stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss it right here on the Savage Nation. Savage. The left always yaps about the importance of keeping religion out of our schools, but apparently they weren't talking about Islam, only Christianity. Cinnamon Stillwell is a Northern California representative for Campus Watch. She's a frequent guest on the Savage Nation. She joins us today to talk about her article about this topic. Cinnamon Stillwell, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks so much for having me on again.
Tell us about your article.
I wanted to call attention to the fact, I mean, this has been going on for many years, but particularly in the post-9/11 world of education, that there's been a demand for Arabic instruction, which is sort of obvious and is needed. And then at the same time, the sort of under the rubric of learning about Islam, trying to sort of educate American children about Islam and, you know, in post-9/11, there have been many cases where, it seemed to me, public funds are being used, taxpayer funds in public schools, to promote overtly religious curriculum. In this case, you know, having to do with Islam, but for those who are interested, in, you hear a lot from groups like the ACLU and Americans for the Separation of Church and State. You know, there's sort of huge outcry anytime there's any sort of semblance of Christianity involved in public school teachings, but we haven't heard so much from these groups when it comes to Islam.
So they're quick to take out anything that says God from our schools, but not when it comes to Allah. Why is that?
I think that's because they tend to be enthralled to multiculturalism, and nobody wants to be accused of being Islamophobic. But the fact is, you know, taxpayer funds are being used to, I think in some cases, to push inappropriate religious instruction. And also what comes into play is also the question of what kids are being taught about Islam, about Islamic history. Is it accurate? Is it biased? Is there indoctrination involved? And I would say, you know, yes to the latter.
Well, give us an example of this indoctrination.
One of them was at Friendswood Junior High in Houston, where the children were required to attend an Islamic awareness presentation during a class time that was supposed to be for physical education. The presentation involved two representatives from our friends, the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE. And as we know, you have your own run-ins with them, is that they are an organization whose officials have a record of making, you know, Islamist supremacist statements, and terrorism convictions are also involved. So not only was this inappropriate use of taxpayer funds, but it involves CARE, which is hardly an unbiased, a simple civil rights group that they make themselves out to be. And children were taught, among other things, that there is one God, his name is Allah. And they were taught about the five pillars of Islam and how to pray five times a day and wear Islamic religious garb. Parents were not notified about the presentation. And it wasn't until afterwards, you know, a number of complaints arose, and the school officials responded, you know, with sort of apologetic email, but that was it.
Oh, my God.
And there were a number of other examples of these kinds of presentations, and one that I remember at the time I blogged about it that I found disturbing was in Amherst Middle School, Amherst, New Hampshire. They had a school project that transformed the town, as it was reported in the cabinet press, into transformed the quaint colonial town of Amherst into a Saudi Arabian Bedouin tent community.
Oh, my God.
This involved gender segregation, and then the boys and girls were segregated, and the girls got to host hijab and veil stations and hand out the abaya, which is the oppressive head-to-toe black garment that, you know, women in Saudi Arabia are required to wear, to female guests.
Come on. How could this be going on?
I believe that female teachers were also segregated, and then the boys, you know, were allowed to host stations that were considered traditional for males in Saudi Arabian culture. And then, of course, there was an Islamic religious station, you know, with verses from the Quran and prayer items, a compass pointed towards Mecca. Some have argued, I got emails from people saying, hey, we're just learning about other cultures. What's wrong with that? I think culture is one thing, religion is another. Again, in using taxpayer funds for religious instruction. And also when you're presenting aspects of culture that are problematic or disturbing, that go against, in this case, women's rights, human rights, and you're just presenting them as a sort of benign cultural practice with no context, you know, I think that that's rather disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
Another school that has gotten, you know, a fair amount of attention is Khalil Gibran International Academy, which is New York City's first Arabic language public school in Brooklyn. And there was a big controversy around that. The principal, the former principal, Debbie Almontasser, was asked to step down after defending T-shirts, which were produced by a group with whom she shares office space that had Intifada New York City on the front of the T-shirt. And these were T-shirts for young girls who were involved with this group to wear. The school also has other problematic associations on its advisory board. The school did go ahead and has opened. It's been plagued by a lot of problems since that time, and it, you know, may or may not pan out. But one thing that came out of the founding of that school was a group, a community coalition group formed by parents, a couple of whom are teachers, called Stop the Madrasa. They have been very active in trying, you know, in contending that this school was an inappropriate candidate for taxpayer funding, and have taken their activism beyond just Khalil Gibran Academy and have been looking at this issue on a national level. And they've been working on policy ideas for legislation and meeting with members of Congress. And I see that as a very encouraging sign. And I see parental activism as absolutely necessary in trying to deal with these problems. These are our kids. If the parents don't stand up, who will? And in many cases, parents, when they've gotten involved and complained to schools, they've been able to, you know, make changes.
We need to be careful and pay attention to what they're really trying to teach our kids in these learning examples.
They're being used to, you know, educate or as I put forward the question, is it being used to indoctrinate their children? It's a complicated sort of web, but I think it behooves all of us to kind of, you know, get involved and sort of learn what we can about it, because these are our children. And I think, you know, the power to educate the next generation is probably one of the greatest powers out there. And I think for a free society to continue to remain so, the so-called silent majority can no longer remain silent. They have to get involved. I see this whole assault, if you like, on public education and its connection with higher education as part of the ideological battlefield. Those have been kind of studying war on terrorism, war on, you know, having to do with Islamism and the sort of ideological side of it, have seen that a lot of the battle, so to speak, has shifted into the ideological realm, and many people are calling it the soft jihad. It's one that's harder to explain to people. You know, it's easy to point out when there's a brutal terrorist attack. It's right there for you to see. But this kind of infiltration and subversion of our own institutions is something that sort of goes on, can go on for decades. I think in the end can be much more, almost more dangerous. I think it was important to call attention to it.
What can the average parent do if their school is having one of these learning experiences about Allah?
You know, it's a tough question for, you know, the average parent doesn't really know what they can do. I mean, I don't really have sort of a blueprint, but all you can do is look at the examples of parents who formed coalition and groups, activist groups, who have become active in opposing this sort of thing. I mean, you can't just let the schools and the sort of bureaucrats in charge of the schools get away with it. Parents have to complain and complain loudly and stay at it, you know, because the other side, it seems, is quite relentless in this pursuit. So I think parents have to be just as relentless. I think it's really grassroots activism, but forming organizations, like I said, you know, like Stop the Madrasa, they're in Brooklyn and they've kind of expanded. Another one is the group Act for America, which was founded by Bridget Gabriel. And they have been forming, you know, chapters have been springing up all over the country, I've noticed. And a lot of them involve parents who are looking at their own children's schools and textbooks and are becoming active, contacting the schools, contacting local representatives, making a stink about it. I don't think we can sit back and rely on the government or other authorities to take care of this stuff for us. We have to keep contacting them and to keep harassing them about it, essentially. I think at its heart, this is going to involve grassroots activism.
Cinnamon Stillwell, thanks for being on the Once Savage Nation.
Thanks so much, Michael.
Savage.
You don't remember me, but I remember you. 'Twas not so long ago, you broke my heart in two.
It is the Savage Nation to show you how evil lawyers can be. And not all are evil, okay? We know this. I want to show you what's going on. Here's a headline that you're not going to believe. Gitmo abuse blamed for weight loss. Guantanamo Bay Naval Base, Cuba today. An Afghan prisoner suffered significant weight loss and other health problems when the military subjected him to 2 weeks of sleep deprivation at Guantanamo in 2004, his lawyer said Friday. Mohammed Jawad lost 10% of his body weight and told doctors he was urinating blood after guards subjected him to the sleep deprivation program, said his lawyer, Air Force Major David Frack, his Pentagon-appointed lawyer. Now, if you read further, you'll see that this wonderful character, Mr. Jawad, is charged with attempted murder for throwing a grenade that wounded two U.S. soldiers and their translator in Afghanistan in December of 2002. The same lawyer had previously filed a motion asking a military judge to dismiss the charges because of the treatment, which he has labeled torture. Now the lawyer filed an additional motion today for dismissal because prosecutors failed to provide records of the health effects before a hearing on the issue last month. So this is the same guy, if you read further down in the article, you'll find out that he did some other things as well. So here's a guy who throws a grenade at our troops, and we're supposed to be concerned that he lost weight while being interrogated at Guantanamo because of rotten, stinking, verminous liberal lawyers like you listening to this show, who, as far as I'm concerned, should be thrown into Guantanamo for the rest of your life. That's if you're a liberal listening to the show. If I had the power, I'd lock you up for sedition. If I had the power, I would arrest everybody in the ACLU and the National Lawyers Guild. If I had the power, you'd be in jail. Your assets would be seized under sedition laws. I would deport you to Afghanistan, to the tribal regions, where you can hang around with your buddies and put on a nightshirt. You could put on a dirty nightshirt and become the rat boy you really are. You know, you might have the best time of your life. You might finally arrive at where you've always wanted to be. Gitmo abuse blamed for weight loss from Mohammed Jawad, who allegedly threw a grenade that wounded two U.S. soldiers and their translator. And the lawyer has the nerve to say the case should be dismissed because he was deprived of sleep and it caused him to have weight loss. This is the world you're living in. Certainly it's not your grandfather's America. It's not your grandfather's military. It's not your grandfather's America. No. No, it isn't. Now, what are the other headlines out there on the Savage Nation? Let's take a look. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. We know that the feds have seized a bank, biggest thrift to fail since 1980-something or other. We know that. But you're more concerned about Brinkley's divorce and this divorce and which lesbian slept with who in Hollywood and which trash-talking vermin in Hollywood did who to what. That's the new Murdochization of the news. Mix everybody's brains up. Make sure they don't really know what's going on. Just put somebody with a tight skirt and a leg crossing on television. Put a corpse with a cross on and call it news. It worked for him in Australia. You know, worked in the Outback. Why can't it work in New York? So there it is. Turn on the news, and there it is. A leg crosser, and there's no news. Then have someone who wraps himself in the flag, who throws the blarney, and there you go. A-Rod. I got to read about A-Rod. Why do they come up with these names for these people? Why do they have to have names, A-Rod? Who cares if this jerk is this baseball player? Phil Graham. I mean, that's really a story, Phil Graham. Phil Graham is the man who uncoupled the Glass-Steagall Act and permitted the gangsters of Wall Street to do what they've just done to you. And Phil Graham has the nerve to say we're a nation of whiners. Well, McCain, I'll tell you, you can do a little better than Phil Graham. Yes, indeed, old Mr. Peepers. Oh, and by the way, dog meat is off the menu during the Beijing Olympics. That's right. Your friends in China, the little nice smiling friends in China, who have out-traded us into the ground, are hiding the fact that they raise dogs in cages and beat them to death and serve it to their wonderful clientele. But in order to fool the gringos, they're taking canine cuisine off the menu for next month's Beijing Olympic Games. Sort of like a Lenny Riefenstahl-esque Olympics. It's sort of like when Hitler ran the Olympics in 1938, 1936. Olympics, that era, everything was nice and clean and starched and good. The deaths, the torture, the camps were closed, were hidden, rather. Same in China. They have slave labor camps. They take out the kidneys of protesters. They beat dogs to death. But they hide it from you. And, of course, our leadership doesn't want you to know any of this because it would be bad for business. And as you well know, what's good for the bottom line is what's good for Goldman Sachs. And what's good for Goldman Sachs is good for them. Not good for you. But what's important is what's good for Goldman Sachs since they run the country and very close to running the world. Now, I wouldn't mind if Goldman Sachs ran the world better, but they're not doing such a very good job lately, are they? Gas is $5 a gallon. Banks are closing. Maybe they don't know exactly what they're doing. Maybe there's a limit to greed and corruption. Maybe even the gangsters of Wall Street will wind up in an orange jumpsuit. Stay tuned. You never know. Now, of course, it's true they arrested a few guys a few weeks ago on Wall Street, but they were the middle managers. They took the fall for the real pirates. The captains of finance have not been arrested. And the reason is they run the government. Ha, ha, ha. I guess that's the way it's always been, has it? No, it's not always been that way. It's not always been that way. Don't be so jaded. After the Great Depression, the people said we can't have this happen again. Families were destroyed. So the government set up controls, regulations to prevent rampant speculation. That's what it meant. When you bought a stock, you had to have a certain amount of money to put down. You couldn't just buy a stock and trade it because that caused an unreal valuation to be created in the stock. It made common sense that you had to put down a certain amount of cash. Same thing with a mortgage. When I bought my first house, I had to put down 20%, not 19%, not 18%. The house was $45,000. I had to scrape together every dollar I had saved my entire life, $9,000. If I had $8,500, the bank said nothing doing. I had $9,000. It was every penny I had in my life. I bought my first house. And I'm glad I did. But the point is, they didn't say to me, okay, we'll give it to you for nothing down because you're a minority. Or we'll give it to you for nothing down because you're an illegal alien and we have to do it because the government will sue us otherwise. And make no mistake about it, I'm the only one who's telling you what really went on. I've been repeating it for 6 months. The liberals in Congress were saying there was a thing called greenlining where banks would not lend to unqualified minorities who did not have a down payment. The liberals in Congress were screaming they were going to sue the banks for not lending money to illegal aliens who did not have the down payment. So the banks, in essence, were forced to give mortgages to unqualified people. And now, of course, it's come home to roost. Yes, there is a racial component, but it's not what you think it is. It wasn't greenlining. What it is was gangsterism on the part of these civil rights racketeers who were threatening banks with lawsuits. And that's part of the reason we've had a meltdown in the mortgage markets, because millions of people who were not qualified for a mortgage were given one at the threat of lawsuits by these pressure groups. Do you understand how this is all working together? Liberalism is coming home to roost. New Jersey, Denise, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Thank you. About 10 years ago, Congress made a change to another major financial pillar of our economy by allowing banks and insurance companies to own each other. Previously, mm-hmm. that was illegal. It was briefly mentioned on the news and passed over.
Well, let's slow down now. Why would there have been a restriction on banks and insurance companies owning each other? What would the protection? What protections would that have afforded the average person?
I'm not a financial expert, but I'll say what my common man's understanding is.
Mm-hmm.
An insurance company is to manage risk. And I can tell you from my point of view in a narrow market, for example, health insurance. The secrecy of our medical records is very important, and now they want us to have electronic medical records, and they're supposed to be quote-unquote de-identified if they share the information. But if you, although I am in favor of health spendings accounts if they keep it secret, the truth is right now, if you have a health savings account, then the minute you make a claim on it, then the bank has your health information.
I hear you on that, but thanks for enlightening us on that. I want to refer again to the Glass-Steagall Act of 1933. You may say, boring, high school, I went to sleep. Understand it was established to control speculation. Who destroyed it? 1999, Bill Clinton. But who lobbied for it? Republican Phil Graham and others. With what money? With over $300 million of bankers' monies who wanted no regulation. Now, the first Glass-Steagall Act was set up to help you from being built by the stock market again. And they created the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. And that insured all bank deposits at the time up to $5,000. But what else was put in place during President Roosevelt's first 100 days, it was called Roosevelt's 100 days, was the FDIC, the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, the Emergency Banking Act, and the TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority. Many so-called conservatives who are not conservatives but Republicans, and remember the difference, many so-called conservatives who are nothing but fronts and shills for the oil and banking interests who call themselves Republicans, or they're just ignoramuses, say that, oh, we didn't need any banking control over Wall Street. Oh, we didn't need an FDIC. Oh, we didn't need the TVA. Oh, we didn't need the CCC. Well, I guess they didn't come from my background, because I actually knew men who were saved by Roosevelt's 100 days, one of whom was my father, who became unemployed during the Great Depression. He couldn't get a job. He was an immigrant and there were no jobs. And through the government, he wound up with a job and got himself on his feet. I have another friend whose father was a tough kid from the mean streets of New York's East Side, a real fist fighter, who wound up doing very well in life, but his first job was with the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps. And he told me what went on in those camps, what a rough and tumble bunch of kids were in those camps. It was, you know, one kid fighting another. You can just imagine when they sent them out to logging trails or wherever they sent them to clear trails and clear brush to give them, you know, money. And they slept in these barracks, in essence. These kids went at each other. They didn't know each other. They were from the worst streets of America. And he told me what went on in there. But, okay, but it saved him. He told me that he shoveled all day long, 10, 12, 14 hours a day with a shovel. He explained it to me. Then later on, he wound up working on a one of those Liberty ships in World War II. And he told me about the perils of the Liberty ships, how so many of them were sunk all around them by submarines. He was one tough dude, this guy. I've mentioned him before. I hope he's doing well. He must be 90 by now. So what I'm saying is some of these government work programs saved Americans. You can't be as cavalier as to say, well, I believe in the free market. It's all free market economics. Let the market determine the price. Gulfstream 5. Morons, this way to the egress. Okay, if you like Bushonomics, good for you. If you like Russianomics, good for you, because you don't know what you're learning. You're learning rubbish. You're having dust thrown in your eyes if you believe that this is a free market. You're getting dust thrown in your eyes if you believe you're living in a free market economy. A monopoly is not a free market, my friends. And manipulating currency is not my idea of deregulation. That is piratism. That's the act of commercial pirates who should be in prison. Well, who's going to arrest them, though? Charles Schumer? Bigfoot is running after a Serbian who beats somebody up in a bar. That's his idea of getting real tough. Not cracking down on Islamofascism. Not investigating Kara's finances. No. Who does Bigfoot Schumer go after? A Serb who beats somebody up in a bar. Oh, he's real. He's going after him. Full bore investigation. A bar fight is his problem. So forgive me for getting distracted here, but please remember the most important point to this little digression is that Republicans are not conservatives necessarily. Republicans are not nationalists ever. They do not stand for borders, language, and culture. They stand for open borders, multiple languages, and a polyglot culture. If they could, they would salute the Esperanto flag. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Money cannot insulate you from madness or anxiety. That's for sure. And Senator Phil Graham says the media has hyped up the current economic downturn. We know that he's a front man for the banks that have caused the economic downturn. The wild speculation, the fiduciary instruments that were invented outside of any regulatory processes that have now come home to roost. The gangsters who have gotten away with murder, you know, financial murder. The kid steals, for example, as we've said a million times on this show, if I'll say it over and over again. You get a poor kid, and that's, you don't have to be a thief if you're poor, but let's say a poor kid robs. Let's start with an obvious one. Robs food out of a supermarket because he needs the food. They'll put him away for 6 months, let's say, in a juvie hall. But if you're smart enough to wind up going to Harvard and getting an MBA, for example, then get into government, then get into banking, and then get into the Congress or Senate, and then go to Wall Street, and then you rob $200 billion, you don't go to jail for that. What you do is you get promoted for that. Now explain that to me, will you? Can someone explain that to me? You don't have to explain. I mean, it's a rhetorical question. Take a look at the market, what's going on. Take a look. They closed the bank today. So the $600 tax stimulus, I don't know what I'm going to spend mine on. I haven't thought about it. I don't even know if it's coming to me. I don't know if I get it back. I pay taxes, so I don't think I get anything. I think it only goes to people who don't pay taxes. I wonder how much of the tax stimulus will go to illegal aliens. Did they divide that up, or that's racial profiling or economic profiling? Yeah. Well, they're right. They're right to mock Phil Graham. The guy is a certifiable Luno here. Dow falls to lowest level in 2 years. Oh, no, but it's all invented. Tell Phil Graham that the Dow has fallen maybe. What did he do? He went over the July 4th weekend to a barbecue in Palm Beach and drank the Kool-Aid? They all talked to each other? slap each other on the back. They smoke the Republican cigar, and they say things are really good. Just tell the morons things are well. You know, banks are closing. Gas is $5 a gallon. Rampant inflation. But Phil Gramm comes out and says, I'm an economic advisor to John McCain. Things are great. You know, it's any wonder Republicans are an embarrassment. And don't confuse Republicans with conservatives, please. John McCain won't even talk to conservatives. John McCain will not talk to evangelicals. Who he thinks is going to vote for him, I have no idea. I mean, how many Hispanics can vote for John McCain anyway? Yet he keeps appealing to them. He goes to La Raza, but he won't go to conservative groups. So here are the headlines. Russia and China veto UN sanctions on Zimbabwe. You hear this? Zimbabwe is run by a criminal murderer whose goon squads ran around with machetes cutting off the hands and feet of the opposition. And Russia and China have vetoed sanctions on Zimbabwe. Gitmo abuse blame for weight loss. Britain urging return to wartime food frugality. Please. Mexican military accused of abuses. Obama considering NASCAR sponsorship. Like Obama, McCain devotes a day to women voters. You hear this, McCain? Who's advising McCain? What drunk or former drunk is advising McCain? Obama dismisses conservative criticism. McCain plans to reveal more about his fundraising, blah, blah, blah. House Democrats set to spend $35 million on TV ads. New McCain ad praises Hispanic servicemen. Great, John. You're doing great. You're really appealing to your base. Listen, if the Republicans understood that the electorate is like customers in a restaurant and they ran the country like a restaurant, or treated the voters rather like customers in a restaurant, they'd have a ghost of a chance. But unfortunately, Republicans don't understand that voters are like customers in a restaurant. If you want repeat customers, you got to cater to them. McCain's not getting repeat customers, the ones who went into the Republican restaurant and voted for the last maitre d', George Bush. A lot of them got burned. The food was contaminated. They got food poisoning. They're not going back in the Republican restaurant, let me tell you. Instead, McCain is appealing to the new voters, people who would never eat in the Republican restaurant to begin with. San Francisco. Well, soon the show will be over. Soon I will go out into the streets of the city with my hat lowered, my sunglasses over my eyes. And I'll take a long, long walk down one street, up another street, through Chinatown, ending up in North Beach.
Savage.